Hi, my name is Anne McElhenney.
And I'm Phelan McAleer.
And welcome to the Anne and Phelan Scoop Daily Virus.
It is, and actually where we discuss the latest news, views, advice and madness of the pandemic.
It's Tuesday, August the 4th, week 20 of the two-week flatten the curve lockdown. Can I just say, by the way, that the Venice Pier is still closed, apropos of nothing. By the way, that kind of proves the reason that, there's still some form of a lockdown going on,
yes,
right?
And just to let people know, the Venice Pier isn't the Santa Monica Pier.
No.
With the amusements and the Ferris wheel.
Which also is closed, of course.
Which do attract significant crowds,
yes.
Right? This is a walkway, a wide walkway into the Pacific Ocean.
Correct. That just normally has a few fishermen and a few people walking. It's never that crowded. Anyway, they've decided in their wisdom to keep it closed.
Or in their stupidity. By the way, the Pacific Ocean compared to the Atlantic Ocean, girly ocean. Big girly ocean.
I'm not sure about that.
It's a girl's blouse of an ocean.
So today we have the following stories that we're going to be looking at. First of all,
What's on the stories today?
Australia has gone completely mad. We have the latest news from Victoria.
And a day in the life. I get lots of newsletters and of newspaper headlines, and it just struck me that the newsletter I got today with a list of headlines in the San Francisco Chronicle reveals a lot more about San Francisco and a lot more about the San Francisco Chronicle than people think. It's a shocking, interesting study of a city gone crazy.
There's some kind of massive rumble with the cats in the background there, so I don't know what that's about. They just had their breakfast. Young people have a great excuse for getting out and about no matter what. And the real reason schools are not opening, and the hint is, it has nothing to do with COVID. But today we're starting
with... Can I just say, if someone suddenly leaves this podcast, it's to go and rescue a cat... Yeah, that has a strange noise.
Yeah, there's something strange going on. Oh, you know what I think it is? I think they might have found a bag of treats. There was some kind of a rustle there.
It was more of a rumble, I would say. But anyway,
do you want to go and check that everything's okay? All right, no. They'll be just fine.
Well, I think I have to now because you read on there and I'll go and check on the cats because if I don't go and check on the cats, the whole of our listenership will be horrified.
In horror that something terrible has happened to the cats. We just heard it kind of a... There's a shuffling going on that's kind of weird.
It's more than a shuffle.
But the first story we have is, this comes to us from Lockdown Skeptics, and it's just extraordinary. So the power-crazed Premier of the state of Victoria, Daniel Andrews, who, by the way, is known in Australia as Kim Jong Dan, announced tough new Stage 4 restrictions in metropolitan Melbourne, including an 8 p.m. curfew. We know how well the curfew went here. People broke it and it didn't make any difference. Here's a list of Stage 4 measures introduced from 6 p.m. yesterday and due to last for 6 weeks. For 6 weeks. God, and it's August. Here's a list, anyway, of those measures. The state of emergency in Victoria has been upgraded to a state of disaster, meaning police can now enter your home to carry out spot checks, even if you don't give them permission and they don't have a warrant. Between the hours of 8 p.m. and 5 a.m, you are not allowed to leave your home except for work, medical care and caregiving. Outside those hours, you may only leave your home for 4 reasons. Shopping for food and essential items, care and caregiving, daily exercise and work. We can no longer have people simply out and about for no good reason whatsoever, said Kim Jong Dan. Again, that's the Premier of Victoria. Daily exercise can only take place within a 5 kilometer radius of your home and cannot last longer than an hour. You cannot exercise in groups of more than 2, even if they're members of the same household. I mean, this is mad. Again, people in grey rooms, getting their wishes. Apart from daily exercise, you are only allowed to leave your home once a day for essential supplies and food. I'm reading this, by the way, and all I can think of is, is this coming our way anytime soon? In the whole of Victoria, you cannot buy more than 2 of certain essential items, including dairy, meat, vegetables, fish and toilet roll. In other words, you've got to go to the shop all the time.
Wow.
Schools have closed again, with all Victoria school students returning to remote learning from Wednesday, except for vulnerable children and children of permitted workers. Permitted workers. God, permanent workers, you know. Although they had that in Ireland, by the way.
That's so communist.
Yeah, you get stopped by the cops and you have to produce your letter. Childcare and kindergarten will be closed from Thursday. Golf and tennis venues, which were open, have now been closed. Weddings will no longer be allowed from Thursday. And funerals will be limited to 10 people.
Unless, of course, it's a political funeral that the Premier of
Victoria thinks is worthy.
Yes.
Face nappies anywhere. That's, by the way, a mask. Anywhere outside your home have been mandatory for people in metropolitan Melbourne since July the 22nd. But that rule has now been extended to the entire state of Victoria. You know, even these small towns in Victoria. You cannot have visitors or go to another person's house unless it is for the purpose of giving or receiving care. However, you can leave your house to visit a person if you are in an intimate personal relationship with them, even during the curfew hours, so there's no ban on bonking. If you have a bonking, by the way, that's a British term. If you have a holiday home or were planning a holiday outside Melbourne, tough cheese, you must remain in the city for the next 6 weeks. And the maximum fine for breaching a health order currently stands at $1,652. You know, really, is there an arbitrary number? Like, somebody came up with that.
So,
and Kim Jong-un said he would have more to say about penalties later today. He's going to increase them. I have one quick question for you, Philip. Are the cats alive?
The cats are alive, yes.
What were they doing?
Who knows? Who knows?
Okay, and just to explain measures.
So there's been thousands of deaths. Are people just dying in the streets? Is that what's...
Well, it's interesting that you say that, Phelan, because these measures, apparently, in Victoria, were prompted by 671 new cases of coronavirus on Sunday. And how many deaths? Seven. Seven deaths. That's up from 295 cases last Wednesday, but down whatever. It was a spike of Friday. And basically, the lockdown skeptics who've been watching this story and really examining the numbers, I mean, they say, you know, could it possibly be the rise in cases is somehow connected to the rise in the number of tests they're giving out? So apparently, Victoria tested 43,000 people on Sunday, July the 26th. Twice as many as on normal days. And the peak on Wednesday could be due to the few days delay before the results came through. In addition, a percentage of the positive results are likely due to the extensive contact tracing introduced in the past few weeks, with targeted testing of those who've been in contact with other infected people.
It's just not random testing. It's targeted testing. So you're actually increasing the likelihood of getting a positive result.
So basically, you know, it seems like a kind of a familiar pattern that, you know, the advice of public health officials, a political leader ramps up testing and introduces a track and trace program. Then when the number of cases inevitably increases, the leader panics and introduces new draconian measures. And that story is from the lockdown skeptics, our friend Toby Young. But, you know, I mean, I'm just reading that and just, you know, shaking in my boots because we have Gavin Newsom here.
Yeah.
And who knows what he's going to come up with.
Well, San Francisco, you know, California did the same, actually, you know. They increased testing on the advice of public health officials. And shockingly, they found new cases. And California escaped the first wave, really, thankfully. Not that it didn't mean we weren't locked down or anything, but they really escaped the ravages of the first wave. And what we're seeing now is the tail end of the first wave that we're getting. In fact, we're getting the first wave here. And, you know, we're now better at fighting this disease. We're now better.
So they did exactly what they said. They delayed, you know, they flattened the curve and meant that the capacity is here so they can handle it. But always remember that the lockdown was never about... It wasn't a cure. We're never going to cure.
Well, they're now sort of claiming it's a cure. I opened my little email I get from the San Francisco Chronicle today, and I just saw all these headlines, and of course the first headline, I just thought this sums up, you know, there's a lot said here, some of it is intentional and some of it isn't. California sees signs of optimism in controlling coronavirus surge, and Newsom's going to, you know, Governor Newsom said in a cautiously optimistic briefing on Monday. Of course, you know, we got better. We actually did exactly what we said we would do. And, you know, he seems to think of that as a failure. And then Bay Area residents are wearing masks. And, of course, they are and follow the coronavirus rules. But there's a big exception. You know, and they say this is an exception when they're in parks with friends, i.e. outdoors. But, you know, let's just say there are areas, there are tens of thousands of homeless in San Francisco Bay Area who don't wear masks, and they're not mentioned because, you know,
heaven for fans.
The only people they seem to be interested in enforcing the law against are law-abiding people.
Yeah.
You know. So then pandemic pods. Oh, of course, they have to get their little dig in at people who... So if you've known, we are on Next Door, on Venice Next Door,
yes.
And every day there are is someone either offering their services as a pod teacher or a parent looking for a pod.
And just to remember what a pod is, as we were explained to by the education expert from Heritage, so this is the alternative to schools reopening, that communities and friends and parents would create a pod, a learning pod, with a couple of the neighbours, a couple of the friends, and have a teacher hired to deal with a few of the children. Great idea, by the way. Of course, what Heritage would like to see happening, and a lot of conservatives would like to see happening, is that money would be withdrawn from teachers who don't want to work and would be given to these pods, and these teachers would be paid from government resources, because that's what you're paying your taxes
for. The money
for.
Follows the child, not the teacher.
Exactly.
But anyway, don't worry, San Francisco Chronicle is there to warn you. The pandemic pods present health risks too. So... in other words,
don't be going. Yeah.
Yeah. Don't be going undermining teachers' unions. And then through line, three Bay Area restaurateurs on life and community and coronavirus. How are restaurant owners navigating the paradox of attempting to make long-term decisions in a world where they have no idea what is around the corner? And you know why they have no idea what's around the corner? Because of the constant changing of rules and regulations by the government.
Because their leaders have not a clue what they're going to do next.
But they just want, you know, so literally, like, we know someone who owns a restaurant. It was open. It was closed for the riots. It opened again for one day. It closed for the riots. Opened again.
Then there was indoor dining for a minute. Now it's outdoor dining.
But look, when she had indoor dining, the health inspector came around and said, okay, you need these tables further apart. But then he says, oh, look, you've got chipped paint underneath the window. Oh, look, you haven't got your CO2 tanks held up by a chain in case of an earthquake. And then you had the people receiving in the mail a fine of $365 because they put up a placard, a poster saying, we are open, a banner, letting the world know they were open, a cheery banner like that. But it was an unpermitted banner and they were fined $365. Then, the next article on their little newsletters, how California reduced its prison inmate population to a 30-year low. Maybe that's what's keeping... Bay Area restaurateurs awake at night, you know. But they're treating this like it's a 30-year low,
and,
you know. So as the crime rises, and then, you know, just madness on madness. Why Californians with mental illness drop private insurance to get taxpayer funded treatment? Like, I don't know what that. Sometimes I don't want to click on these because I just think that almost is.
Well, explain that one to me now.
They've obviously made it so easy to get taxpayer-funded treatment for mental illness. I think they force the government, they take them to court and force them to give them really top-class treatment. It's just, it's the government being crazy about being crazy. Then, shouldn't San Francisco's Tenderloin District receive wider pedestrian areas, play spaces amid pandemic? Now, the Tenderloin place is where tens of thousands of homeless people live. So the wider pedestrian areas will just be wider places for tents and homeless. But they don't mention that here either. And then San Francisco judge upholds city's ban on evictions during coronavirus pandemic. Just what landlords need, really. You know. And by the way, then the most important... I mean, it's great. I didn't click on any of these because I feel sometimes the headlines just say it all. And if they don't, it's better not to click. University of California San Francisco group demands anti-racist changes. A group of UCSF faculty and staff is seeking to, quote, actively dismantle structures of racism that are interwoven into the foundation and daily operations of University of California, San Francisco. I know nothing about University of California, San Francisco, but one thing I can tell you for sure, right, that there is no structures of racism that are woven into the foundation and daily operation of that place.
I would say that's for sure true.
Except affirmative action, by the way, which keeps Asian kids out to allow other minorities in. That's probably the only racism. it just goes on and on. And, you know, oh yeah, and then, you know, just in case you thought, you know, oh, a bit of democracy, California Supreme Court says no to referendum challenges to certain state laws. So California has this initiative where you can, if you get enough signatures, then you can put a measure on the ballot to throw back a tax or knock down a tax. No, no, local water rate increase can't be challenged or blocked by voter referendum, the state Supreme Court says on Monday. And the pandemic, this one, the pandemic crushed vehicle sales in the Bay Area. Then people flocked to COVID cars. Car ownership has always created a dilemma for the environmentally conscious Bay Area. But pandemic health concerns have overridden some of these qualms. In other words, people are going, I am not getting on a bus. I am not getting on a train. I am going to drive my car. And I don't care about the fake environmental concerns that I had all along. And then the one thing that California really needs, open forum. California would benefit from a climate crisis action plan. It's just madness. And then Fisherman's Wharf restaurateur, and this is the serious, AJ Sanchez dies at 53 from suicide amid financial pressure and deepening depression, his wife said. You know,
oh God, 53 years old. Yeah. This is terrible, horrible.
Why do you think he had, if he was getting letters in the post saying, after trying to open his, and then you get letters in the post saying, don't forget, Americans with Disabilities Act, you need a special table or you will be fined, and rogue lawyers that we allowed, the ADA here, there's these rogue lawyers going around checking that your mirror is high enough in your bathroom. And if it's not, they're allowed to sue you, and you have to pay them $5,000 to go along. So they sue every restaurant in the city and take millions. There's been $875 million, I think, taken from ADA cases in recent years.
We know restaurateurs who've had to deal with that, and it's basically a form of extortion.
Yes.
People going in, getting a measuring tape out, and apparently there's people who are doing this professionally.
Yes.
And they wheel themselves into one place after another place with their measuring tape and find some small breach in the regulations. And then, they sue. But I'm moving on to the next story. So basically, the Wall Street Journal have a good piece today saying what it is about young people that makes them break these restrictions, and why it is. And I know from people, from friends in Ireland who have, young children or whatever, young children, teenagers or whatever, and older than teenagers, young people basically, who are pushing back against the restrictions. And, and the parents are kind of at the end of their tether with it. Mm-hmm. But the truth is that actually this is, this is nature. And it's quite great, this article actually in the Wall Street Journal, is basically saying there's nothing they can do about it. This is what children do. This is what young people do, that they have actually no control over it. Young adults, the scientists say, don't be scolding, because the impulse among adolescents and emerging adults to break away from family and interact more with peers is part of normal development. Socializing and seeking new experiences is how they forge their identities. Exploring is a neurobiological mandate, says Judith Erdesmein, co-founder of director of the Massachusetts General Hospital Center for Law, Brain and Behavior. So all kinds of clever people. In most instances, young people, they don't set out to do risky things. It's that they're programmed to do these things. Research shows that adolescents, loosely defined as those in the developmental period, I love this, by the way, and I think this is important for parents to remember, the developmental period ranging from the age of 14 to 26. I was very interested when I found that out for the first time, because I looked back on my life and I thought, yeah, that makes sense. Apparently your brain isn't even fully formed until you're about 26. Depending on the function measured, at that point in your life, you're biologically driven to seek new experiences. When children are born, their brains aren't fully formed. The brain creates a large amount of synapses or neural links between cells. During adolescence, these synapses get cut back or pruned. The brain eliminates the connections that aren't important. One way the brain determines what's important and what's not is through real-world experiences and how frequently synapses are used, which is why independence is crucial for development. And while we're kind of laughing and saying this story, this is really serious. At the same time, dopamine levels reach a lifetime peak in adolescence. Dopamine supports motivation and reward-driven learning, which drives them to value immediate gratification over future gains, which can lead to risky decisions. Motivation is influenced by rewards like novelty, thrills, and the presence of peers. As a result, something that hits multiple reward buttons can be particularly enticing, such as the opportunity to attend a party that will be viewed by friends on social media, etc., etc. So basically, studies show that adolescence is a period in younger people's lives when their social environment and interactions with peers are important for their brain development, mental health, and developing a sense of self. So throw into this, so, you know, and it goes on, the article goes on, and it's very, very good, but basically talking about...
It says lack of peer interaction could have detrimental effects.
Oh, hugely detrimental, and this whole thing, and the article is worth reading in full in the Wall Street Journal today, and talking about the dangers of social isolation, and throwing that story into the mix with this other story, again from the Wall Street Journal, where the editorial board is... you know, opining on the story about the unions wanting schools to remain closed. And they're saying that the one silver lining to this awful story of unions trying to keep the schools closed is that parents and an awful lot of people in the population who might not otherwise have realised quite how awful these unions are really getting an education. Mm-hmm. So the editorial board says, for most Americans, the coronavirus is a scourge, but teachers' unions seem to think it's also an opportunity to squeeze more money from taxpayers and put their private and public charter schools competition out of business. That's the only way to read the extraordinary effort by national and local union leaders to keep their members from returning to classroom. Like, this is extraordinary stuff, by the way, because what they're doing, instead of the demands that the unions are making are not about, you know, safety in the classroom, not even slightly. And it's worth hearing from some of them. Last week, Randy Weingarten, the leader of the powerful American Federation of Teachers, declared support for safety strikes if local unions deem insufficient the steps their school districts are taking to mitigate COVID-19, right? And on Monday, an alliance of teachers' unions and progressive groups sponsored what they called a national day of resistance around the country, listing their demands before returning to the classroom, which include, I mean, this is just fabulous. I mean, you can't believe this, right? So here's the demands. Support for our communities and families, including cancelling rents and mortgages, a moratorium on evictions, foreclosures, providing direct cash assistance to those not able to work or who are unemployed, and other critical social needs. Moratorium on new charter or voucher programs and standardized tests. We get to the crux of the situation here.
Yeah, so
right?
They want to wipe out their competition. New charter schools, new voucher programs. And of course, standardized testing allows the world to see how they compare to charter schools and how they compare to the rest of the world. And the answer is badly. So rather than try and improve the standards in public schools, they want to wipe out the competition and wipe out a way of measuring themselves against the competition.
They also are demanding a massive infusion of federal money to support the reopening, funded by taxing billionaires and Wall Street. The phrase for this is, according to the Wall Street Journal editorial board, I love this. They basically say this is political extortion. Rather than work to open schools safely, the unions are issuing ultimatums and threatening strikes until they are granted their ideological wish list. Children who would have to endure more lost instruction are their hostages. And it goes on. I mean, and by the way, we have it here. Gavin Newsom, by the way, we had a situation here where originally public schools, right? Public schools were going to be closed. And then, of course, what that then threw into sharp relief was the fact that private schools were going to reopen.
So all the parents were flocked to private schools to get their children into private schools. And he realised that. So he immediately announced that the ban would also cover private schools.
Yeah. I mean, this is, you know, it's incredible. As the union, as the Wall Street Journal editorial board say, the only silver lining is that people are getting to understand just how awful these unions are, how little they care about the kids. By the way, how little they care about health, by the way. The last thing on their list, actually, in a way, you know, in among their demands is not so much anything to do with health, is actually all the other things that they've always wanted. Their kind of ideological wish list has suddenly now found a home in their demand letter. Their kind of, and as they say here, you know, they have the children are held ransom. It's a really horrible situation, actually. So we've come to the end of this morning's podcast. It's Tuesday. It's unbelievable. We're still in some form of a lockdown here. I don't know what it's like where you are, but we are still very
no interior restaurants, no coffee shops, no bars, nothing. Only exterior dining. Schools closed. Schools not reopening.
And we've definitely seen a rise in face nappies. I like that phrase, by the way, face nappies.
As you Americans would call them, face diapers.
Face diapers. Oh yeah, face diapers. Yeah, people wearing masks. And the one that really bothers me is walking on the beach, and obviously Phelim and I are very respectful of going into businesses and wearing face masks. If that's the rules, that's the rules. You don't have to go into a business if you don't want to. But the beach, you know, where the air is clean and free and there's breezes and all of that kind of stuff, and loads and loads, 25 miles of beach, loads of space to be isolated. And you see young people, this is the one that kills me. You know, you see a young man with a mask on, you know, jogging, like completely alone. Or you'll see a girl, like in the neighborhood here, walking a dog alone, completely alone, wearing a mask.
But I understand them, actually, in some respects. People are frightened. And do remember, the person wearing the mask is not your enemy. The person not wearing the mask is not your enemy. Your enemy is the Chinese Communist Party. You need to remember that. This disease came out of China. This disease came out of Wuhan. The Chinese Communist Party closed Wuhan off to the rest of China, but allowed those international flights to go from Wuhan to Milan, infected Italy.
And everywhere else.
And everywhere else. And 1 million Chinese people came to America in January of this mm-hmm, year mm-hmm. alone.
Yeah.
Not December, not February as well. They kept coming and they kept coming and they kept coming, but the Chinese wouldn't allow people out of Wuhan. So they protected their own people, but helped spread the disease here.
And wouldn't allow the team from the WHO in, wouldn't allow doctors in.
Lied to the WHO and arrested doctors who blew the whistle.
And some of those doctors are still disappeared or dead.
Yeah.
We should always remember the focus should always be on the Communist Party of China. They're the ones that need to be always, if you're angry, that's the only people to direct your anger at.
Yes.
Or maybe if you're in New York, you might want to direct some of your anger towards Governor Cuomo, who instead of taking the most obvious health measures and safety measures possible.
Yes.
When he had the Javits Center, when he had
the ships
in the bay, as they say, empty, completely empty, basically. And he sent infected people back into nursing homes, forced them back, and mandated that the nursing homes receive these people. And that is why the number of dead, if New York was a country, would be one of the highest in the world. So, you know, maybe you want to direct some anger at Governor Cuomo, but, you know, most of your anger should really go to the Communist Party of China. But anyway, enough about anger for today. It's Tuesday, and hope you're okay wherever you are.
And don't forget, we have an Alan Phelim scoop tomorrow.
And we've very special guest, Michelle Obama, tomorrow on our podcast. We're quite surprised, too, when she agreed to be interviewed. So more on that tomorrow.
Check it out. Bye.